Wade awaiting the screen, which he rejected. Darts inside off the glass, and he was fouled. Menacing screen set by Frye forced the switch. And D-Wade knocked it down. Look off pass to Corver, who was ready. And buried it for three. Corver off the bounce. Got it to go for three. Yeah. Corver, quick catch and shoot for three more. LeBron spins away from trouble. Takes a bump. Gives it up to a cutting D-Wade. Reverse the score. Corver, double clutches. Two possession game. LeBron chains gears. Eurostep. JR sends it. The bottom for three. Corver again. Good again. Corver. On the cut through. Corver didn't get it. Frye needs it. Buries it. LeBron James sizes up Porzingis. Step back three.
A 1-0 winner. In most cities, you would be arrested for this larceny.
They were phenomenal. D-Wade, Channing, Jetty, Kyle, they were everything to us winning this game. And even though they had some miscues and things of that nature, they just came out and played, you know, with a lot of effort, a lot of energy, and, you know, got us back in the game. Oh, no, there's never another game in the Garden. Never. This is the best basketball arena in the world to play. Happy to be a part of this and be a part of this crowd. The crowd is amazing. You know, their fans are great. And to be an opposing guy, you know, being able to perform on this stage is always it's always a treat.
Of course, it was tough. We were up by 20-something, I think. I think we just gave up 40-something points in the fourth quarter. We fight really hard. I'll tell you one thing. This team is really special. And you ain't coming to my house playing that water bottle flip game again. I don't care who you are, king, what do you call yourself, king, queen, princess, whatever you are. You know what? We're going to fight. And nobody out there going to punk us.
Well, I'm the king, my wife is the queen, and my daughter is the princess. So we got all three covered.
I learned that the Cleveland Cavaliers can be had. That it is not a guarantee that the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to be coming out of the Eastern Conference. Should they be the favorites? Absolutely. But it's not a foregone conclusion. This is an older team. The oldest team in the league, averaging age of 30. They pick and choose when to defend. And the kind of explosion that we saw last night, believe it or not, was not from LeBron James. It was from a guy by the name of Kyle Korver. I just think about Boston. I think about Milwaukee acquiring Eric Bledsoe. I think about those two teams in particular. I'm not going to dismiss the Washington Wizards. I just think it's one of those things where it is not a foregone conclusion that the Cleveland Cavaliers is going to cakewalk to a finals.
You can say that when Ohio State plays great football, they're as good as anybody in the country. When Auburn plays great football, they're as good as anyone in the country. That's why I think tonight is going to be very interesting to see how the deck is shuffled and where you find those teams, the two lost teams, at. No team has been in the playoffs that has been ranked lower than ninth.
Defensively, Clemson's got the edge, but Oklahoma, you might argue their three best wins, you could say, are better than Clemson's best wins. You know, Oklahoma with those three wins over likely top 15 teams. You know, if you're looking at just the best wins, I think Oklahoma would sit there at second, and then I'd put Clemson. But if you're talking about teams that complete teams, I'd put Clemson second. So I wouldn't have any qualm about it, but I would put Miami fourth.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. It is the extravaganza rolling right along as we get started at 11 minutes past 3 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope you're having an outstanding day. Thanks for being with us. My oh my. Yeah, I think that Final Four at this stage of the game is pretty much set. I feel like we know which top four teams will be there. The order might be a little bit questionable, but I think we know that the top four, when the CFP committee, the College Football Playoff Committee, releases their newest round of rankings that don't count, and don't matter, but gets us all hyped up for anyway, because they make a half an hour special out of it on ESPN, charge exorbitant rates for the advertising rights, and gets everybody talking, even though we all know that 7 days from now they will say, last week had nothing to do with anything. Last week does not matter. We reevaluate everybody each week. Then why the hell are you evaluating? But we know what they're going to do, and we know it's going to make us talk, because we're like dogs. We're like Pavlovian dogs. They ring the bell, we froth at the mouth and say, oh, where's the food? College football playoff rankings come, oh my God, where's it? I can't wait to see that. Who do they have? Do they have the right four? We're dogs. I admit it. Oh, yes, that's the first and last time I will ever bark on the radio. It's real. It's true. We are Pavlovian dogs. Tell us the word playoff is in play, and we are all over it, even though it means nothing. Nada. Nil. Nine. Nothing. When it comes to the Final Four. But those four teams tonight clearly will be, in some order, Alabama, Clemson, Miami, and Oklahoma. I don't know the order, but I think that's what's going to be. I think it's pretty clear that that's what's going to be. And two-loss Auburn is probably just on the outside looking in, as is undefeated Wisconsin at this point in time. So we're going to talk about that. Coming up at about 4:10, our second hour guest is going to be Eddie Meissonette, sports fan, journal editor, Fox Sports contributor. Does a tremendous job covering the NBA. We always talk hoops with him, but this season he is covering hoops and college football. So we'll be able to get his perspective on both of those things coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. For the first hour, it's just you and me and Kush at 866-240-1065. Whenever you're ready to dial, you got something you want to hit, hit it. 866-240-1065. I think we need to hear Enes Kanter one more time. I feel like it's important that we listen to him basically telling LeBron James, we back down from nobody. You're not a king here in New York. You're not a, you can be the queen. You can be whatever you want to be, but you are not the king in New York. We're not having it. We're not bowing down to anybody. Kush, if you can give me Enes Kanter and LeBron's response one more time, that would be outstanding. And we're pushing for it. Yeah, maybe I can.
I think gave up 40-something points in the fourth quarter. We fight really hard. I'll tell you one thing. This team is really special. And you ain't coming to my house playing the water bottle flip game again. I don't care who you are, king, what do you call yourself, king, queen, princess, whatever you are. You know what? We're going to fight. And nobody out there going to punk us.
Well, I'm the king, my wife is the queen, and my daughter is the princess. So we got all three covered.
That's just some of the best. Enes Kanter, of all people, does he look like a trash talker?
No.
I mean, seriously. You know what he looks like? He looks like a poor man's copy of Vlade Divac is what he looks like. Vlade Divac was much, much more skilled. And probably much better as a trash talker, too, Vlade. Vlade could get a shot or two in from time to time. But Enes Kanter, Enes, if you will, but I think it's officially supposed to be pronounced Enes, but Enes Kanter of the Knicks, newly a Knick, said, nah. By the way, you are not, you can call yourself whatever you want, but we're not bowing down to you. That was last night after the game, and we'll talk about that epic comeback that you just heard a lot of in the montage, led by LeBron James and maybe perhaps more by Kyle Korver, who made five triples in the fourth. Let me say that again, five threes in the fourth. It was a straight-up J.R. Smith three-point barrage, the kind that J.R. used to do. And, in fact, has done many times, but just not so much lately. But it was an amazing comeback. But that was last night after the game. And I don't know, Kush, if you have followed this, but Enes Kanter was not done. LeBron James might be done talking about him and about the Knicks, but Kanter had one more message for the four-time MVP known as King James. Today, you're not the king of New York. The morning after that fourth-quarter comeback, and a road win for the Cavaliers that they absolutely needed to have just for the sake of credibility. I mean, to be punked by the Knicks twice in the first 4 weeks of the season.
Right.
After already being punked by a bunch of other crap teams that have beaten the defending three-time defending Eastern Conference champions. I mean, they could not go out the way they were going out, down 23. They just could not do it. So the morning after that amazing comeback, Enes Kanter published a post. Oh, I beg your pardon. Excuse me. LeBron James published or put a post on Instagram suggesting that he was the king of New York. It's a picture of him standing in the garden last night on the New York Knicks logo at center court. What he wrote was, you're welcome, and then the emoji of a crown of New York. Hashtag my favorite playground. Hashtag strive for greatness. And then what looks to be a rocket, I guess. I don't know what the rocket is or anything. But king of New York. Kanter told the media, no, we've already got a king. It's Kristaps Porzingis. Sorry about that. Holy cow. Kanter just saying, you know what, four-time MVP. You know what, three-time champion. You know, maybe greatest player in the world today. You might be the king in your mind, but here in New York, it's Kristaps Porzingis. And by the way, Kristaps Porzingis has been royalty this season for the Knicks. Kristaps Porzingis outscoring LeBron James, FYI, 29.5-point average this season through a month, roughly a month. LeBron James at 28.1. Porzingis, also averaging 7.3 rebounds and 2.2 blocks. He is having just a phenomenal start to his second season. He is shooting 49, let's say 50, because it's 0.498, 50% from the floor. And he's shooting 41% from three, this big seven-footer. He's just doing some very, very special things. That's the king of New York, says Enes Kanter. And by the way, for the night last night, Porzingis had 20 points, 7 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 block. LeBron James did get the better of that matchup. Not that they were necessarily guarding each other, but they did get the better of the matchup both in the win column and in the stat lines last night. Well, Porzingis, by the way, did I say 7-footer? 7-3. 7-3, shooting 41% from 3. That's just kind of sick. Kush, how about the little shoving match between LeBron James and a guy whose name I don't know if I can still pronounce. Did you want to take a shot at Frank's name?
No, I don't, actually, because I know I'll get it wrong.
I was counting on you to do it or to make the mistake for me. No, in all seriousness, the Cavaliers, or LeBron James, was challenged in large part because of something he said a couple of days ago. He was challenged by rookie guard Frank Ntilikina. And I'm assuming that the T is silent, and so it's Ntilikina.
That'd be my assumption too, but who knows?
He's a 19-year-old kid, Kush. He's a child. He's a child in NBA parlance. He's a 19-year-old, and he was the first pick of the Knicks in the draft. And obviously, you know, that was back when Phil Jackson was still running the show. And LeBron decided that after the Cavaliers faced the Mavs a few nights ago, he decided to take a shot, he says, not at Ntilikina, but at his nemesis, if you will, Phil Jackson, by saying that Dennis Smith Jr. of the Mavs should have been the Knicks' first pick. Dennis Smith Jr. had 21 points,
right,
and 7 assists and 5 rebounds in that game against the Cavaliers. Cavaliers won 111-104, but LeBron was very taken,
yeah,
and smitten, if you will, from a basketball perspective with Dennis Smith Jr., and afterwards he said, Knicks messed up. Knicks should have taken him instead of who they did. And he's trying to say, I meant no disrespect to Ntilikina, but it was just more of a shot at Phil Jackson. Well, you can't take that shot at Phil Jackson without it being a shot at the kid, because you're saying Phil Jackson screwed up by taking that kid.
Right.
So Ntilikina last night, after a LeBron James alley-oop dunk, ball kind of goes out toward the free throw line there, just gets bounced around. Ntilikina goes to get it, tries to get back to go take the ball out of bounds, and LeBron James just puts up a roadblock. Essentially just stands there and will not get out of his way as he tries to go to take the ball back out behind the end line, the baseline. And he just kept moving into Nilakina's way, and finally Ntilikina shoved him once, shoved him twice, and shoved him basically 3 times in 4 seconds to get him out of the way, and James just continued to stare him down, which brought Enes Kanter into the fray. Justifiably so, by the way. Kanter came up and got into LeBron's face, jawing at him very, very sternly. James not backing down either. And essentially, you know, letting him know that, you know what, exactly what he said on about the Instagram post today. You're not the king of New York. You don't pull that crap around here. We're not going to get punked by you or by anybody. That's just not the way this whole thing works.
I don't care who you are, king, what do you call yourself, king, queen, princess, whatever you are. You know what, we're going to fight. And nobody out there going to punk us. So we're just going out there, play our game, and I think we're just going to get better every day.
You know what, I have not really rooted for the Knicks since Patrick Ewing left and retired, or well, actually left first because he ended up in Seattle for some embarrassing reason, like so many careers do. But I was a huge Ewing fan, so I was a huge Knicks fan for that reason. But I'll tell you what, I'm starting to like him now. Now that Carmelo Anthony is gone, who I do not like, now that Phil Jackson is gone, whom I do not like, and now that you've got young kids like Ntilikina and Enes Kanter, who's not as young, obviously, and Kristaps Porzingis, who's another young kid. Now that you've got some young guys there that aren't afraid to, you know, aren't afraid of and aren't going to back down to the likes of LeBron James, I like their moxie, man. I like their style. I like their moxie. And for about 3.5 quarters last night, I liked their play because they were blowing the Cavaliers out, Kush.
Yeah, and in terms of that last part with the you know, some of the younger guys that are on this Knicks team, you know, it's okay in a way because they're not as laughable because they're at least actually trying some kind of actual building it up and not whatever the heck Phil Jackson and essentially everybody before him was doing. But what I liked about, you know, some of this heated exchanges, not just Cantor and the other, is I'm glad to see that something ticked off not just LeBron but the Cavs enough. Because how many times already this season, which, and another side important note about getting that win in addition to the comeback is at least they're a 500 team again, you know? And I'm liking seeing that chippiness from them because too often so far it feels like they've been sleepwalking. I mean, we had a wild stat last week, especially against not good teams.
What did you see? What chippiness did you see that impressed you? Because I didn't see any chippiness from the Cavaliers. I didn't see any spirit from the Cavaliers. I didn't see any fight in the Cavaliers. What chippiness did you see other than LeBron himself, just LeBron,
yeah,
being the roadblock there and kind of touching off that little skirmish with Ntilikina and then eventually Cantor? I didn't see any Cav with any fight. I didn't see any Cav with any spirit. I didn't see any Cav with any, you know, any juice, if you will, throughout that entire 3.5 quarters.
Yeah.
I mean, they were down 23 points. It took a fourth quarter in which they outscored the New York Knicks, again, who should be considered terrible, even though they're a game over 500. Talent-wise, this is what they are. They outscored them 43-25. That's the only way they were able to come back. Korver got red hot. LeBron knew enough to get it to him because LeBron was, you know, he was 7-14. So, you know, the barrage by Korver kind of closed the gap and got them back in it, and then they took it home, which I was glad to see. But, Jim, the starters in this game for the Cavaliers, I didn't see any chippiness. I didn't see any spirit. Kevin Love only played 23 minutes, only scored 6 points and six rebounds.
Yep.
Jay Crowder only played 22 minutes, scored 13 points, had one rebound from a forward. J.R. Smith played 33 minutes, but was a non-factor in large part. He had 8 points. He had five rebounds. Shumpert, who started, played 20 minutes and did not score. The thing really only turned around, if you think about it, when Ty Lue said, get out of here, and benched a lot of those starters and gave their minutes to the bench, to the likes of Korver, who played 29 minutes, and Wade, who had 28 effective minutes with 15 points and 8 rebounds.
Yep.
And 3 assists. Channing Frye played 25 minutes, more than every starter except for LeBron James and J.R. Smith. So to me, I got to tell you, outside of LeBron being a little bit, you know, I'm gonna stand here and make you go around me, which is kind of a, I guess if you want to use the word chippy, I don't know, it's just kind of a statement, you know, that says, you know, I'm not moving for you, you move for me. Other than that, I don't see the life. I don't see chippiness. I don't see attitude coming from the Cavaliers. It's one of the reasons they fell down by 23.
No, and that's absolutely true. And I guess what I mean by that is something, anything, to get some of the guys on this team into a different mindset, whether it's LeBron yakking at Enes Kanter or the fact that the starters, all but LeBron and JR, getting benched for that fourth quarter. And I like that fourth quarter lineup, not just because they happen to be making shots, but the dynamic of it. You had LeBron out there kind of playing that point forward. Wade was out there, too. And then the other three were shooters in some way, shape, or form, even if they're not good defenders, Frye and Korver. But when they're making the shots, it can make up for it. Because you've heard me mention before when talking about this subject that, to me, at times, they just don't feel like they have the shooting capability that they had, especially last year. As well as the year
before.
That's because
Kyrie Irving is gone. He was clearly their best outside shooter. I mean, that wasn't a specialist,
sure,
like Korver or JR.
Yeah.
But the loss of Kyrie Irving is a big part of that.
No, and it is. And we're obviously seeing and feeling the after effects of that, especially when the rest of the point guard crew that's left over slash brought in is either hurt or been completely ineffective so far this year. Derrick Rose occupying both of those categories,
yes,
by the
indeed.
Way. But I every time I look at this team, the thing that gets me more than anything is just it doesn't matter, the seemingly sleepwalking through things. And that's how you get beat, because when you're sleepwalking, you don't play much defense. You let the misses of shots get to you a little bit more, and then Those things snowball, and you're down 23 in the third quarter against a team like the Knicks and need all those shots with that unit in the fourth quarter because the starters essentially got benched just to make a huge comeback. And anything, I don't care what it is, if it's Cantor yelling at LeBron and calling him a princess, I don't care. Something needs to get under this team's skin to have them give more effort. It's the sleepwalking through these first 14 games that I'm so tired of.
I'm going to tell you something, and I've said it before in smaller spurts, but I'll say it a little more directly and a little more loudly and a little bit more authoritatively, I suppose. I put 100% of that on LeBron James. And I know it's just going to sound like I'm drinking Haterade here, but I'm not. He's supposed to be the leader. He's supposed to be the inspirer. He's supposed to be the guy who gets his guys fired up and not allows them to sleepwalk. You can say Ty Lue. All right, how about that? Instead of 100% to LeBron James, I'll give that probably 60-40. 60% LeBron James, but if LeBron isn't driving his guys and pushing them and pulling them and cajoling them and doing whatever has to be done to get them to stop sleepwalking and play these games like they matter, which I don't think he is, because I don't think he thinks they matter, to be 100% honest. He's talked about this kind of stuff before. It's why he sat out so many games in the last couple of years and then blamed the schedule for too many back-to-backs. Bull crap. He just feels like a lot of these games don't matter, and they'll start mattering after the All-Star break. So if it isn't LeBron James, then the 40% does go to the head coach. And the head coach, Ty Lue, we know he is not a, he's not an established figure like a Popovich or a Stan Van Gundy or a, and I can't even really say Stan because he hasn't won a title, but, he isn't one of those guys yet to command the respect of a Dwayne Wade who has won titles, to command the respect of a lot of other guys. But if the head coach isn't pushing and pulling those guys to care and to say that these games matter, that every possession matters, that we play defense in November the way we want to be playing defense in April and heading into the playoffs in May, then that's a problem. The head coach has to be able to figure that out, and if the head coach isn't figuring it out, the star player who calls them my guys had damn well better figure it out, or vice versa. Maybe LeBron has to figure it out first, and if he doesn't, then Ty Lue has to carry them along.
And that's a very interesting assessment. And obviously, Ty Lue has to be shouldering some of the blame in all of this. There's no question about it. And
just from the effort standpoint for me.
And that's what's causing, a ton of these problems that we're seeing through 14 games where the Cavs are at a break-even point, and it feels a lot worse than that given some of the losses that they've had along the way. Like, I'm looking at you, loss at home to the still 2-win Atlanta Hawks, for example. And I know that this is the type of team with the type of personnel that is unfortunately more often than not going to care as much in the regular season. And obviously the problem with that is that last year they had the cohesiveness and the talent to be able to weather that storm and still win, 50-some-odd games. And this year, I'm not so sure. How many times have I already said that this is probably a 500 team, maybe even through December, before guys get healthy? Yep. And you see how Isaiah Thomas, when he finally hopefully can return.
Which is going to change the dynamic again.
You sure?
Which is what I've been talking about since they made the trade and found out that he was not going to play anyway until around the All-Star break. You say January, I still don't see him coming back, Jim, with that hip, which, is obviously much more severe than anybody thought it was when the trade happened.
Yeah.
Which is why they held out and said, well, we know when you know he's injured, we're going to hold out and get a 24 second round pick. Now that'll make that hit better. So stupid. But anyway, we've been talking about this, that they're going to figure it out with Rose and figure it out with Wade and figure it out with JR coming off the bench, if that's what they do, with Tristan. Well, Tristan's out too. That's not a small factor. We should point that out.
Yeah.
They're not playing 100% loaded right now. Not just because of Isaiah, but because
the
of
Rockets game was a brilliant example of how they missed Thompson. They were just absolutely demolished on offensive and defensive boards.
But when he was there, the figuring it out, if he's going to start or if he's going to come off the bench, mm-hmm. is Love going to play center and Crowder start at the four, all this stuff. Once they get it all figured out over the course of a 2.5 month period, 3 month period, whatever it is until the All-Star break, then, here comes Isaiah and we got to start all over again. All new chemistry, all new rotations, new starting point guard. Everybody else is going to be in a different place now. And that's not an enviable thing to do if you're Tyronn Lue. So, not that he has a choice, because the injury factor is what the injury factor is. But I do not see it, you know, being something that is cleared up, maybe with any definitive answers anytime soon. And that includes really all the way through February when he comes back. All right, it's 3:33. Hey, let me tell you this. Guess what I just found today? All right, it wasn't found. It was brought to me by the promotions department. They got us 5 more pairs of tickets to the Battle of I-75 tomorrow night at the Deut at 8 o'clock. I've got 5 pairs of tickets. I will give them all away on this show. Not now. Put the phone down. I didn't give you the cue to call. But listen throughout the rest of this program, and I will give you a cue to call to be whatever number caller it is. We'll give you a pair of tickets to Toledo and BG tomorrow at the Deut. So we've got that coming up. And right now, Kush, let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Wild Stat of the Day last night, staying with the Cavaliers in the NBA theme. Looked sluggish and dead in the water again, trailed by 23 until the fourth quarter. Fleury gave them the win in their biggest comeback. Here's the stat in a regular season game since a 25-pointer that they came back from a deficit against Boston way back in November of 2006, almost to the day, November 11th of 2006. Regular season game, we say that because you may recall the Cavaliers trailed by 26 late in the first half of Game 3 of the first round of the playoffs last year in Indiana and came back to win that one too. But as far as the regular season goes, their second greatest comeback ever, and that is your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. All right, we got a bottom of the hour local sports center coming your way from Kush. On the other side of that, we got some more NBA talk, and we've got some very interesting NFL controversy coming from our friends down to the south in this state, talking about Cincinnati. Why is the head coach mad at one of his players for taking care of his body? I'll explain that story and then maybe ask your opinion of it. At 866-240-1065 as we continue right here on
Extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
And rolling on, are we? It is 3:43 coming up in about 20 minutes, 25 minutes or so at about 4:10, somewhere in that neighborhood. We're going to talk with our good friend Eddie Meissonette from Fox Sports National, as well as from the sportsfanjournal.com, sportsfanjournal.com. All right, I did say that we would be giving away a pair of tickets to the game between the Rockets and the Falcons in the Battle of I-75 tomorrow, and I told you to wait for the cue to call. Are you ready? Cue, caller number 5 right now at 866-240-1065. Gets the first pair. I got 5 pair to give away today, and we'll do it all between now and 5 o'clock. Caller 5 right now, 866-240-1065. That first pair of tickets is yours. Tomorrow the game, of course, kicks off at about 8 o'clock from the Deut. So that'll be Rockets and Falcons. So I want to pivot for a moment away from the NBA. We started our show with the NBA conversation about what happened last night to the miserable Cavaliers, who found a way to come back from down 23 to win. But and also the little fight that kind of almost happened between LeBron James and a couple of relative NBA nobodies. Which to me, I think speaks a lot more loudly than a lot of people realize. You know, no respect, no fear for the Cavs, no respect of the Cavs for the Cavs. I should say no fear of the Cavs, no fear of LeBron James from a bunch of nobodies in New York. I think that says something, to be quite honestly, but I'll get back to that. I want to pivot to the NFL, and this has nothing to do with wins, losses or anything else. Although speaking of that, the NFL, boy, the NFC, we talk about this almost daily about how loaded and extraordinarily highly competitive the NFC is. And last night, a tremendous win for the Carolina Panthers bumps them to 7-3. They blew out, did the Carolina Panthers, the Dolphins, 45-21 on Monday night. And the Panthers, I mean, look at all of this. Look, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There are 5 teams in the NFC with 7 wins or more. There are 2. In the AFC. 2. Then you count teams that have 6. You would count just one of those. And then 1, 2, 3, 4 more that have 5 wins. You're talking about an absolutely loaded playoff field, a potential playoff field. So if I may just do this on the fly here one more time here. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There are 10 teams in the NFC. 10 teams of the 16 have 5 wins or more. In the AFC, that number checks in at 1, 2, 3, four, five, six. Six teams have five wins or more in the AFC. The NFC's loaded. It's going to be a dogfight for the Lions. I bring this up simply because the Panthers now tied with the Saints with seven wins at the top of the South. Now, the difference, the Saints have only two losses. They have played one less game thus far. But they're 7-2. The Panthers are 7-3. And the Falcons, the defending Super Bowl representatives from the NFC, are still there at 5-4. The Rams are 7-2. The Seahawks are 6-3, both major factors in the NFC playoff race. The Vikings at 7-2, being chased by the Lions at 5-4, and the Packers at 5-4, although the Packers have a little bit of a tougher road to travel because of their quarterback situation. And then, of course, there's the Eagles at 8-1 and the Cowboys at 5-4. So Carolina's not a joke. The Saints are no joke. The Rams are no joke. And the Lions are going to have their work cut out for them to even find a spot in that crowded playoff field. Now, that's not what I wanted to talk about. I mentioned Cincinnati. So let me do that. And first, congratulations to our winner, Paul Roach of Rossford. Jim tells me that Paul Roach of Rossford is our first winner of the Battle of I-75 tickets for tomorrow night at the Doit. Congrats, Paul. Enjoy the football game. We'll do more of those coming up after the top of the hour. So, Kush, I started to talk about Marvin Lewis, and his very interesting comments about Jeremy Hill as running back. I won't go into the Marvin Lewis shouldn't be coaching an NFL team anymore for the time being. I mean, he's been there, what, 13, 14 years, can't win a playoff game, can't advance, can't take his team to the next level, frequently has these types of seasons where it is a lost season, they're 3-6 and terrible, not disciplined, can't keep the wraps on people like Vontaze Burfict.
And twistedly, it's still the overall best Bengals era since Sam Weiss was the coach at Boomer Esiason and the quarterback, which is still weird when you think about it.
Well, it's kind of the only era since then, isn't
That's
it? I mean,
true.
How many coaches have they had since
Weiss? They didn't get the nickname the Bungles for almost 20 years for nothing.
Yeah, I mean, and they won't fire him because, you know, quite frankly, he's too cheap, and this is always big, you know, the big rap on
Mike Brown,
because he's too cheap to pay a today's salary to a big name coach. He can keep Marvin Lewis there for cheaper. But I don't want to get into all that, except for what Marvin Lewis is doing here, and it's a very curious conversation to have. Running back Jeremy Hill is opting to have season-ending ankle surgery, and Marvin Lewis isn't happy about this. He said yesterday, "Did Lewis? Jeremy thinks he needs to have ankle surgery." That's an interesting phrasing, isn't it? Jeremy thinks he needs to have ankle surgery. Yeah, I think I would be surprised. I think he's consulted a couple physicians. Both said that this was something that could wait until after the season, but he just felt like it was causing too much discomfort. Now, Hill had not been on the Bengals injury report because he wasn't experiencing ankle problems that were serious enough that he would miss game time, so he wasn't on the injury report, and that was Marvin Lewis's biggest gripe with all of this. Quote, "I don't think he had any instance of a problem since this August when he rolled the ankle in training camp or whenever it was. Training camp or warm-ups in a game, I can't remember. One of those times in preseason, but that's the only instance he's had this fall." Now, the problem that a lot of people have with this, and that I quite frankly do as well, is that Jeremy Hill, if he does indeed need surgery, then it's a lot more difficult and a lot more dangerous, a lot more serious than just a rolled ankle from back in training camp. You don't have surgery on rolled ankles from 2 months ago, 3 months ago. You just don't do that. If he's going to actually go under the knife, it must be real. For Marvin Lewis to say, "Why don't you wait till the end of the season?" is essentially telling him, put our team above your own personal health. A team that is 3-6. He's not saying, "Jeremy, we are rolling with you as the centerpiece of our running game. Bro, don't get this surgery now. If you can hold off, hold off. Man, we're steamrolling into the playoffs. We're 7-2, and we need you, man. We got something special cooking here. Don't have this now. If it's even questionable that you can put it off, put it off." But he's mad that Jeremy Hill won't have surgery put off so that he can continue to run the ball on a bad ankle for a team that's 3-6, a team that's whose season is over. That's a little bit of a problem. Publicly challenging the man's decision to have the surgery after consulting with two physicians who said it's necessary. Well, actually, Marvin Lewis is saying that two physicians said he doesn't have to have it now, but obviously somebody else has said that he does. If he actually doesn't go through surgery, then you can question Jeremy Hill's real motivation here, that maybe he just didn't want to play for this losing team the rest of the season. But if he goes through with the surgery, you know, you're not going to voluntarily go under the knife for something that you don't need. Nobody is going to put themselves in that kind of a position, at least not anybody I can think of. But this is the difficulty in sports. You've got a losing team. You've got a coach who is kind of always on the proverbial hot seat, according to everybody in the NFL except Mike Brown. And now he's basically saying Jeremy Hill's giving up on us. He's choosing to have an elective surgery he does not need because he doesn't want to play the rest of the season. That's a public dissing of one of your players who's been a key player for you, even though his role has been reduced because of Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon has 107 carries this season for the Bengals. Jeremy Hill just 37. And Jeremy Hill would be a free agent this offseason. And, you know, it just stands to reason, by the way, that if you are a free agent coming up, why would you want to play on an injured ankle for a 3-6 football team, potentially putting your payday, whatever that payday may be? I'm not saying he's going to get a massive contract, you know, a guy who's a little bit up in age and kind of lost his job a little bit to Mixon, but he's going to be looking to sign somewhere else for a payday, and you get injured. Either if you get injured now or make that ankle worse because you don't get the surgery that perhaps is needed, or you wait and get it done afterwards and then have, you know, an injured player trying to negotiate a new deal with a new team and an agent trying to say, yeah, he's recovering from that surgery just fine. Why not get it done now and get fully healthy for when that time comes? Kush, the question is, from, you know, just the conversation standpoint is should players have the right, especially if they're in losing season situations, should they have the right, if they have a legitimate injury, to say, you know what, I want to heal myself up rather than continue to play on a banged up leg, knee, ankle, whatever the case might be? I want to heal up now rather than continue to play for this this you know, team in this lost season.
Yeah, I'm in a twist away. I don't see what the argument is about. He might have. It sounds like he might have needed surgery in the off season for this whole thing. Anyway, it sounds like it's one of those, well, you could play on it, but you'll probably need the surgery. If you're an athlete, especially one in Hill's case, who, as you mentioned, is looking at free agency, so he's hoping to get some kind of payday. Why wouldn't you get yourself healthy? I mean, honestly, this would be something a guy like Hill would have to think about, even if he was on a good winning team that looked like it was going to the playoffs. As you mentioned, he only has 30-some-odd carries compared to Mixon's over 100 already.
Yeah, 107 to 37.
Right, so he's clearly not even the main back anymore in that backfield in Cincinnati. But to then get called out for it by your own teammate, hothead though he may be, That's messed up.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's it really is a messed up system down there in Cincinnati, and it shows what a lack of control, honestly, that Marvin Lewis has over that team. Are you shocked? How many years has he been there now without winning in the playoffs?
Let's see, their first year actually back in the playoffs was like 06 or something, so he's been there for over 10 years in this state of can't win a playoff game.
Yeah, but I think he's in like his 13th or 14th season as head coach, is he not?
Yeah, something like that. Now you're wanting me to check just to, you know, for, you know.
Well, here, hold on. I can probably find it faster than you can real quick here. Yeah, Marvin Lewis has been the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals
since
2003.
So actually this is his 15th season.
15 years. And does he have a playoff win at all in that time?
7.
I'm sorry? 0-7.
0-7.
0-7.
Which, fun another way, does mean the Bengals have made the playoffs 12 of his 15 years, which I suppose can kind of count for something.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what, I'm not a Bengals fan, so this isn't, you know, this is neither here nor there for me. I don't really care. I'm just indifferent. Although I am annoyed by their fans and their Who Day crap. It's one of the stupidest things ever. Is it Who Day or they Who Day?
Wait. That's still a thing?
Yes.
I mean, that was a thing 10 years ago. And it
Are
was,
you kidding?
It was
it's still a thing.
Then.
It's still a thing in every Bengals
Ow.
Webpage, every
okay.
Bengals Twitter fan, every Bengals everything. Every week, they who is it Who Day or Who Dat?
Who Day, I thought.
Well, it's one because the Saints had the same thing, except theirs was like Who Dat. I think the
Saints
Bengals had
Who
Dat
because yeah, Who Day was Bengals. That I do remember.
And then the Saints I think do the Who Dat. But every week, if you go on Twitter, you see Bengals fans, you know, screaming Who Day? Who Dat was it? Who Day say going to beat them Bengals? And the answer, of course, is everybody, especially in a playoff game. They annoy me. I have to say, Bengals fans annoy me. They kind of stick in my craw a little bit. But beyond them, I don't have any rooting interest, you know, pro or con, for the Bengals. But I will say this. The fact that this man has been a head coach for 15 years and has not won a playoff game, the fact that this man has been a head coach as more and more players continue to have more and more troubles, either with the law or with being suspended or with all kinds of other bad stuff on the field, excuse me, the likes of Pac-Man Jones, Vontaze Burfict, et cetera, it is a mystery to me. A mystery to me. How this man can be, you don't get to stay head coach in the NFL for 15 years unless your name is Bill Belichick.
Right.
Right? Or unless your name is, Bill Cowher for, and I know he didn't even last that long before he decided voluntarily to hang it up. But I mean, you have to be, you know, one of these playoff teams every year and winning in the playoffs regularly and going to the Super Bowl, sporadically, you know? 2, 3, 4 appearances in a Super Bowl with a title or two in 15 years, and you're God. You can stay as long as you want. But you get, you know, what, 7 playoff games in 15 years? That's less than half of the years you've been there that you actually made the playoffs. And when you get there, it's one and done. I just don't understand.
Yeah, the way this season is going, it'll be 8 no playoff seasons and 7 playoff quick exits.
And, oh, by the way, now you're calling out your players. Now you're criticizing your own players for saying, you know what, my ankle is bothering me, I might need surgery, if I need it, I'm going to have it now, as opposed to after the season, rather than play for your 3-16. Now, let me offer the flip side to that.
Okay.
The flip side to that argument, because I do like to be fair, and I think everybody who listens to this show knows, I have opinions, but I will absolutely present the other side, if there is a fair point to be made on the other side, too. When, Jim, do you recall a number of times in the last couple of years, superstar caliber college players have decided to skip their bowl games.
Of course, yep.
Because their bowl games are essentially
meaningless.
They're just exhibitions at the end of the regular season. They don't count toward a conference championship. They don't count toward the national championship unless you're part of the 14 playoff. So if you decide to not play in your bowl game, you're essentially saying, you paid me to do this, you paid me my full scholarship to play in all of these games, but I see bigger things on the horizon for me. I don't want to get injured in the bowl game and then hurt my draft stock, so I'm not playing. And I have criticized those players to a degree. To a degree. This is somewhat similar to that. You could take Marvin Lewis's side of this and say, Jeremy Hill, you are getting paid. You're not getting paid just to play the 9 games and then take a voluntary elective surgery that might not be necessary right now, according to 2 different doctors you've consulted, just because you don't want to keep playing for 3-16 because you see better things on the horizon in terms of a free agent contract in a couple of months. If I'm being consistent, I might have to be just as critical of Hill as I was of those seniors not wanting to play in their bowl games because they're going into the draft. So I think there is an argument to be made on Lewis's side as well.
Okay, yeah, I can see that, especially when you're comparing it to a conversation we've seemingly had every end of December for the last 3 years, at least, Matt, I can remember now, with the college players not playing in the bowl game. There is a little bit of similar...
Especially when they're star players.
Sure.
We're talking about
star,
like Christian McCaffrey, those kinds of
people. Yeah, exactly. So I can definitely see that side, and it is true, and that's the biggest part of this, you know, to get the facts right as of this moment, which is... There are a couple doctors who are saying, no, this isn't fully necessary right now. Mm-hmm. And that's where you're getting some of these guys. So I can kind of see a little bit, on the other side. But regardless of which side I may want to take, the players pointing fingers at each other in their own locker room, more or less calling the others wussies, more or less.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of stuff that no wonder they're 3-6.
Well, you know what, Jim? I want to get out now because we got a top of the hour Sports Center coming our way, and then I want to keep as much time as possible for Eddie Meissonette, who's going to be joining us. But there's a don't let me forget about this after the 4:30 break. Because there's another element to a story. It's a Browns thing, but it's very similar to this, not having to do with the players, but having to do with one of the team's owned and operated radio broadcasters. who is doing something very, very similar to what Marvin Lewis just did here with Jeremy Hill. It's a strange story, and it's Cush. It's a name that you're very familiar with as well, both player and broadcaster. And if you don't know that story, don't look it up, because I want to share it with you and get everybody's thoughts and reactions to that after the 4:30 bottom of the hour Sports Center. But for now, we have a top of the hour local Sports Center coming your way. And as we do go into the top of the hour break, let's give away tickets number two, a second pair of tickets now to the Battle of I-75 tomorrow night at the Deut. Go see UT and BG at 8 o'clock if you are caller number 4 this time. Caller 4, 866-240-1065. That second pair of tickets is yours, and we're back after this.
Right away in the screen, which he rejected. Darts inside off the glass, and he was fouled. Menacing screen set by Frye forced the switch. Andy Wade knocked it down. Look off pass to Corver, who was ready. And buried it for three. Corver off the bounce. Got it to go for three. Yeah. Corver. Quick catch and shoot for three ball. LeBron spins away from trouble. Takes a bump.
And finishes it.
Gives it up to a cutting D. Wade. Reverses score. Corver double clutches.
Oh, rubber rim in the air.
Two possession game. LeBron chains gears. Euro stepped it. JR sends it.
The bottom for three.
Corver again.
Good again. Corver.
On the cut through. Corver didn't get it. Frye needs it.
Buries it.
LeBron James sizes up for Porzingis. Step back three.
Oh, holy cow! A one and no letter. In most cities, you would be arrested for this larceny.
They were phenomenal. D-Wade, Channing, Jetty, Kyle, they were everything. So it's us winning this game. And even though they had some miscues and things of that nature, they just came out and played, you know, with a lot of effort, a lot of energy, and, you know, got us back in the game. Oh, no, there's never another game in the Garden. Never. This is the best basketball arena in the world to play. Happy to be a part of this and be a part of this crowd. The crowd is amazing. You know, their fans are great. And to be an opposing guy, you know, being able to perform on this stage is always it's always a treat.
Of course, it was tough. We were up by 20-something, I think. We just gave up 40-something points in the fourth quarter. We fight really hard. I'll tell you one thing. This team is really special. And you ain't coming to my house playing that water bottle flip game again. I don't care who you are, king, what do you call yourself, king, queen, princess, whatever you are. You know what? We're going to fight. And nobody out there going to punk us.
Well, I'm the king, my wife is the queen, and my daughter is the princess. So we got all three covered.
And you can say that when Ohio State plays great football, they're as good as anybody in the country. When Auburn plays great football, they're as good as anyone in the country. That's why I think tonight is going to be very interesting to see how the kind of the deck is shuffled and where you find those teams, the two lost teams, at. No team has been in the playoffs that has been ranked lower than ninth.
Defensively, Clemson's got the edge, but Oklahoma, you might argue their three best wins, you could say, are better than Clemson's best wins. You know, Oklahoma with those three wins over likely top 15 teams. You know, if you're looking at just the best wins, I think Oklahoma would sit there at second, and then I'd put Clemson. But if you're talking about teams that complete teams, I'd put Clemson second. So I wouldn't have any qualm about it, but I would put Miami fourth.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Said it before and I'll say it again. I still don't know what the order will be, but those are the four teams. I think it's pretty safe to say. Tonight, when the next round, what is it, 9 o'clock, Cush?
I thought it was 7 or 8.
Is it 7 or 8? Is it that early? I thought it was later. I will say this. I'm proud of myself. I don't watch that either.
No, me either. I don't watch it. I just wait for the list to get posted.
Right. Me too. Because I know what it's for. They want ratings. They want more people watching these shows. And what that means is, it's a TV show that's just a show. There's no substance there. It's a show. It's for money. It's not for helping to get to the Final Four. It's not for helping to, achieve the bottom line here, figuring out who the best teams are. It's a show because they've said it before. You know what, Chris? I almost think they did themselves a disservice because they bothered me. They upset me to some extent when they acknowledged, and what's really weird about it is they couldn't have won me over either way. When they essentially said that we don't carry these over week to week. Last week's rankings have no bearing on this week's ranking. In other words, a team doesn't just, well, we had them third last week. This is how they performed. We think they slipped a little, so we're going to drop them from 3 to 4. They said the committee did 2 years ago, and this is the fourth year for it, that they re-rank every team every week. That if you were first last week, it doesn't mean anything. You do not have an advantage over anybody else this week. It's a new ranking. So if that's the case, that each week's ranking has no bearing on the next week's ranking, then why have multiple weeks rankings? Why not just announce it, the first one, the Tuesday after Championship Saturday? The Tuesday after all of the conference championship games, which are what, December 2nd, I think?
December 2nd. Maybe some on the 1st.
Right. So you know, that's championship weekend, championship Saturday, if you will, and then you just have it. Just say, here it is. This is our fun. So all of this is just for show, so I don't watch it. I don't watch it because I don't give them the satisfaction. I don't think they deserve it. It's just a moneymaker. But I do look for the posting after they're done. And obviously, I think those four teams posted, that will be posted as winner or as the Final Four right now, will indeed be in some order. Alabama, probably number one. But Alabama, Clemson, Miami, and Oklahoma, I expect to be one of the top four as well. And I think deservingly so. They have continued to play very, very good football. They beat Ohio State, as we know, in week number two on the road at the Horseshoe convincingly. They really took apart one of the nation's best defenses in TCU last week. So it's continued to be consistent. And I think Oklahoma deserves a spot there. As I said, undefeated Wisconsin will have a shot. Probably somewhere in the 5 or 6 or 7 range. Well, I think they were, what, 8th or 9th last week? Again, that shouldn't matter, but there it is. And I think they'll probably somewhere in the 5, 6, or 7 slot now, as will be Auburn. Their two losses will not overcome. Well, in a way, their two losses will overcome their incredibly dominating win over Georgia, because I won't have them in the top four, but their climb will be extensive in terms of where they are rated. They were 10th, I think, going into this particular game against Georgia that they dominated. So Auburn, a two-loss team, could be the first two-loss team to get into the postseason, depending on, of course, what happens in the Iron Bowl against Alabama. We're supposed to talk about that with our man Eddie Meissonette of Sports Fan Journal and Fox Sports. We're having a hard time making that connection with him. He's out in L.A. We'll get to that as soon as we can, hopefully. Meantime, Kush, who's our winner of the second pair of tickets?
Our other winner from Toledo, and I just
Carl Peterson of Toledo won the next round of tickets.
I can't see the message when I sent them to you, and I already took them up front because
yeah,
you know that
yeah,
game's
you
tomorrow.
Stop doing
so this guy's got to get here
every
to get them.
I ask you, you lost it. Carl Peterson of Toledo is our winner of the next round of tickets to BG and UT tomorrow night at the Dort. I have three more pairs of tickets that we'll give away before the end of this program comes up at 5 o'clock. So we're going to talk a little NBA. We're going to talk a little bit of college football playoffs with our man Eddie Meissonette. And since he's not here yet, Kush, I want to tell the story that I was starting to tell you.
Yeah, go right ahead.
About radio. It's a very familiar name to Ohio State fans. Matt Wilhelm was All-American linebacker for Ohio State on the national championship game of 2002. Played 8 years in the NFL with the Chargers, then the Packers, and then the Niners. Or I think it was Niners and then the Packers. And he retired shortly after winning the Super Bowl in 2011 with the Packers. And he's an alum, by the way, of my alma mater. So I know Matt pretty well. And we've had him on this program breaking down Ohio State-Michigan games and bowl games and other things. Well, he does radio for the Cleveland Browns in-house radio broadcast, okay, their network broadcast on their flagship stations out there in Cleveland. And stop me if you already know the story, but most people probably don't. But last week, he was on their in-house broadcast. They do a two-hour show every day called Cleveland Browns Daily, and Matt Wilhelm ticked off the entire Browns front office, coaching staff, comms team, and everything else. Because he openly, this ties to the Jeremy Hill story from Marvin Lewis and the Bengals. He openly questioned whether first overall draft pick Myles Garrett had a legitimate reason to self-report his concussion that cost him a chance to play in the game in London against the Vikings 2 weeks earlier. Myles Garrett, according to the story, Myles Garrett went in and voluntarily reported himself to the team's training staff and doctoral staff, saying that he's having a little bit of blurry vision, a little bit of headaches, and so he wanted to be tested for a concussion. They tested him and decided, yes, you do have a concussion, and so he was held out in the concussion protocol. Wilhelm went on their in-house radio show and essentially said, I have a problem with that. And maybe it's just because I'm old school, but, you know, for us, it's, you know, you don't self-report for the most part. You rub some dirt on it and you get back in the game. to say that that ticked off the Browns is an understatement. They were furious. They talked to him directly. They made a public statement condemning it, saying they praise Myles Garrett. Garrett himself said, you know what? I will play with an injured muscle. I'll play with an injured back. I'll play with an injured knee, especially if we're going into the Super Bowl or something. But he said, I'm not going to sacrifice my brain. I'm not going to sacrifice my future brain health. If I feel like I've got a concussion, I'm not going to play with it. And there are some who tweeted and posted in support of Wilhelm saying, yeah, you're making that kind of money, first overall pick, get in the game. You don't self-report. If they notice something and they take you out, that's one thing. But you don't voluntarily go in and say, I don't think I can play. I think I'm hurt. It just kind of violates the warrior code. That's what Wilhelm was essentially saying, that it kind of violates the warrior code. Greg Williams was not in the building when that broadcast, which is, by the way, originates from their headquarters, okay, where the coaches in the front office are. Greg Williams was not in the building, and he told the media later that it's a good thing he was not, because he would have gone right down to the studio there and handled that. And knowing Greg Williams, he's a bit of a hothead, the Browns defensive coordinator, but he had Myles Garrett's back. But, Kush, it just kind of flies up into the kind of, you know, similar place that we just had a half hour ago, talking about Marvin Lewis,
yeah,
coach of the Bengals, basically calling out Jeremy Hill, saying, what do you need to go and have this ankle surgery now for? You can get it at the end of the season.
Yeah, really.
Keep playing with us. Rub some dirt on it. Right. Get back in the game for this 3-6 football team.
Yeah, it kind of feels like the way you're telling it. The first thing, obviously, the big difference is one was a fellow player in the same locker room. The other is a guy, you know, doing a radio show about it. But otherwise, the arguments and things go back and forth seem very, very similar.
Yeah, I mean, it is a question that I guess exists in 2017 football. Does the warrior code still prevail when it comes to potential brain injuries or, you know, concussions, those kinds of things? Or is it right for a player to say, you know what, test me, even if it's going to cost me a game? Now, we do have Eddie Mycenae, I see now. We'll get right to him. Garrett, by the way, may draw a little bit of scrutiny for this comment. He said, there's no way I'm putting my brain on the line and my future health, by playing with a concussion. However, he did say, if we were going into the Super Bowl and I felt the very same way, I would not have self-reported. So in other words, if I can win a ring, I'll put my brain and on the line and play with a concussion. But if I'm 0-8 or 0-7, as they were at the time before going to London, well, then no way in hell I'm gonna do that. And that kind of calls into question his, his justification for the decision that he made. We'll come back to that, but I'm told we do have Eddie Mycenae on the line now. Eddie Mycenae is the editor at sportsfanjournal.com and a contributor to Fox Sports as well, joining us right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket in Toledo. Eddie, good to have you back, my man. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's Tuesday. I'm living a Biggie lifestyle. Just trying to live the dream, my man.
Well, live the Biggie lifestyle, man, but don't end it the same way if you can avoid that, my friend. If you want to,
I'll do my best.
Yeah, no. That's silly. I don't like that. I don't like that description. Find another way to describe the lifestyle you're living. You're living big, but not Big E. Eddie, we're going to talk two things, and I appreciate the fact that you're doing some work on both college football this year for your publications, and of course the NBA, which we have talked to you about many times in the past. Let's start with college football, since coming up tonight, they will indeed, unveil the latest college football playoff rankings. Are you in agreement that the four teams are pretty much set? It's only a question of order, that Alabama will remain in the top four. They'll probably ascend from 2-1. And the other three, in some order, are going to be Miami, surging because of that blowout win over Notre Dame, Oklahoma, surging because of their blowout win over a tremendous defense in TCU, and Clemson, which just continues to be steady and impressive. Are those your top four?
I think I'm pretty okay with the top three. I think that there's a legitimate case to make Miami the number one team in the country just because they have the best win. And I think that Alabama, even though they've also steamrolled everybody in the country, like if you put their resumes together and you say who has the best win, Miami has the best win, and they've done it on a primetime national stage, and so I could see real merit for putting them number one. I think Oklahoma is going to be locked in at number three, but I think the four seed, you know what's interesting with Clemson is, like, Clemson had that loss against Syracuse, and look, I'm not going to knock anything in regards to what happened against Syracuse, and they were dealing with some real issues with Clemson's quarterback being hobbled in that game. But that's not the best loss to have. And I think with what's happening right now with Wisconsin's schedule getting a little bit better every week, I think that there's going to be a merit, there's going to merit some conversation to consider putting Wisconsin higher as we get closer towards the end of the regular season.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that Wisconsin, if they keep winning, and especially if they beat who do they have now? I've lost Wisconsin's game.
Michigan.
Oh, Michigan, yeah.
Michigan.
See, the Michigan game, I've said the same thing about Ohio State's chances of climbing back up, and they have climbed all the way back up to 8 now, at least in the coaches' poll and in the AP poll, not the college football playoff poll yet. I don't know how quality a win over Michigan will be at the time they play because, you know, Michigan is breaking in a new quarterback. They've decided to cut their losses with John O'Korn and build for next year with Brandon Peters. They're winning the game running the ball against some teams that can't stop the run, but I don't count Wisconsin and Ohio State among them. I feel like this might very well be a four-loss Michigan team. And at the end of it all, how will the committee look at a win over Michigan? Is it that quality of a win for the Badgers and or for the Buckeyes?
Yeah, the scarier thing I think about Wisconsin, if you look at Wisconsin's schedule, what's fascinating is that they have this win over an Iowa team that's probably, you know, is going to finish the season ranked. They have an actually really good win against a surging Northwestern team that's probably going to be in the top 20, here when the rankings come out. And they've got a win over the Fighting Lane Kiffins, which whatever you want to say about it, they're a 7-3 win team. 7-3 team that's probably going to lock up winning the conference title, and if you could say you beat a conference champion, that's going to look really good. But their scarier thing about Wisconsin to me is they're going to probably, if they beat Wisconsin, Michigan, and they beat Minnesota, they're going to go in a conference title game where they're probably going to face a 2 or 3 loss team potentially in Ohio State or Penn State, and if they beat them, that team's going to have 3 losses. And so beating a 3-loss team in your conference championship game, what is that really worth?
That's right.
And for me, I think that's the scariest thing, I think, for Wisconsin moving forward.
I completely agree, and I think that really leaves them in a very tough spot, a precarious spot as far as the Big Ten even having a representative in these Final Four. Let me do a little scenario with you because I talked a little bit about this. Jim Kushelin and I did yesterday, Eddie, and I want to get your perspective on this. Assuming certain things happen in the SEC and in the ACC championship games, basically my question is do you think that the committee will give 2 spots to one power conference and leave a conference champion like the Big Ten out, leave a conference champion like the Pac-12s out and give that second spot? For example, let's assume a conference championship game between Georgia and Alabama, and let's say I apologize.
Auburn. You got Auburn, Alabama.
Auburn,
next
Alabama
week.
In the Iron Bowl, and then it would be Alabama and Georgia. Yes, in the if Alabama wins, but if Alabama wins and then loses the conference championship game, they would be a 1-loss team, just like you would have, you know, 1-loss Clemson, 1-loss Oklahoma, maybe, you know, a Wisconsin team that is, you know, beating, as you say, an unimpressive Big Ten championship team or Big Ten championship game opponent. Would they keep Alabama as one of the top 4? And likewise, when Miami plays Clemson in the ACC championship team, would they, if Clemson wins, keep 1 loss at that time, Miami, into the Final Four over a conference championship team that might have more losses?
Yeah, I think that's the fascinating thing. I mean, we could be in a scenario where we have Miami with a loss, Alabama with a loss, and justification to keep both of those teams in the top 4. And Clemson can win and maybe still not make it, or they do make it. I don't know. You know, and meanwhile, you've got Oklahoma sitting there where they're still going to have to play West Virginia, and they're probably going to have to get another rematch against in the most silliest thing ever about the Big 12, where they play a round-robin schedule, and
yeah,
they play everybody, and then they still have to play a conference title game. And Oklahoma's probably going to sit there and have to play Oklahoma State or TCU again,
yeah,
which is shenanigans and tomfoolery. And you've almost got to pray, A, that Oklahoma keeps winning out so that you don't have a scenario where you could have 4 1-loss teams all in the top 4, and Wisconsin's going to sit there at 12-0, maybe 13-0, and not be able to put a legitimate claim up to say that we have a better record or better resume than those guys. And if you think the Big Ten commissioner...
You can't expect a committee to do that, can you? They can't tell a Power 5 conference champion that is undefeated you weren't good enough to be better than one of these 1-loss teams.
Well, I think what's the adage they use? They leave their hats at the door. I think if we're going just off simply off a resume, I think that they're gonna struggle to find a reason, good reason. I mean, Wisconsin is basically Washington this year, and we saw what I actually thought Washington played pretty well against Alabama, all things considered. I would be hard pressed to say that Wisconsin is going to be left out, but if you ask me right now if they're better than any of the four teams we just mentioned, I don't know if they're better than any of those.
I don't know if they are either, but I guess my point is that I know they're supposed to leave their hats at the door. You're right, and I'm not saying they would be arguing on behalf of the Big Ten per se, but just any one of the Power Five conference champions that is undefeated. You know, they managed to go through their schedule unscathed. Everybody else had a trip, a blip, a blemish, whatever you want to say about their strength of schedule. They didn't. I just cannot imagine them not having one of those spots. If they lose one game and if they're a conference champion with one loss, now you're going to say, you know what, I got that one loss compared to the Georgia one loss or the Alabama one loss in that scenario or in the Miami one loss, then absolutely fine. You know what, their schedule doesn't warrant it. Their one loss is worse than the others, fine. But I cannot imagine them leaving an undefeated Big Ten championship team out or if it were an undefeated Pac-10 champion, Big 12 champion or anything else. If you go undefeated in the Power Five conferences and win your conference championship game, you've got to be in.
I wish I could agree with you. I just don't think the resume matters at all. And I could also make a legitimate case that UCF has as good of a record and as good of a resume as Wisconsin. And I think UCF is not doing Wisconsin any favors because I think you could look at UCF's schedule and who they've played and how they stacked up. And you could even make a legitimate case that UCF has a better non-conference schedule than Wisconsin.
You can do that if you want. You could do that all day long if you want. But, I mean, last week they were 18th. The committee doesn't recognize that because they're not Power Five. They're not considered to be, regardless of what you say about the schedule, they're saying, look, you know, this is reality here. They're not. That's not going to happen. Now, could they be a New Year's Day Six Bowl? Absolutely. But I can't see that happening. Eddie, let me get to the other side of this. If it's not Alabama and Georgia, what if Alabama's one loss comes not in the conference championship game but in the Iron Bowl? Auburn, a two-loss team, beats Georgia, then number one in the college football playoff rankings, then beats Alabama, number one in the college football playoff rankings, then wins against Georgia again in the SEC championship game. Two-loss Alabama or two-loss Auburn is in this Final Four then, yes?
Yes, I think if you go in there and you get those wins against Alabama, I think if you go in and you say, I beat Alabama and I beat Georgia, period,
twice.
Especially if you say you beat Georgia twice, then I think you're automatically in. You might not be a one seed, but you're automatically in.
What about Bama then in that scenario? Again, only a one-loss team, and you might have a one-loss Clemson team, a one-loss Oklahoma team to consider, a one-loss, you know, well, if Clemson has only one loss, that means they will have beaten Miami, so then they would be a one-loss team. So would Alabama, because they're Alabama, get the committee's nod and be a second SEC team in the playoff if they don't even make it to the conference championship because their one loss is to Auburn in the Iron Bowl?
Absolutely not. I think that they don't make it. I think that based on their resume, and it's funny to say, but based on their resume, and the funny thing is we never thought that them beating Florida State 24-7 would end up being a blemish.
Right.
But because the way that Florida State has flamed out, they don't have an anchor in their resume anymore, and it's not even their fault. But when that happens, they don't have the security of saying, like, hey, we have a big non-conference win to anchor what we did. And now that means that it is more necessary for them to run the table because right now their best win is against a Mississippi State team or maybe an LSU team that both might finish outside the top 20 in the country. So they need to run the table, and if they don't win a conference championship, I think Alabama's outside the top four.
Will the committee hold it against them that they schedule the way that they do? And in order to make sure they are primed and ready to go in the Iron Bowl, they schedule a non-conference FCS team like Mercer in the game before. I mean, it's almost a bye week. They schedule a bye week before the Iron Bowl. I feel like if I'm a committee member, I'm thinking, man, that's Bush League. That's a punk move.
I don't know. It's one thing to think. I think that's one perspective. The other way I'd look at it is why don't other teams do things like that? That seems pretty smart to me personally. And again, we wouldn't say this about the fact that.
Because other teams aren't punks. That's why. It's a punk move, and other teams don't want to make punk moves.
And it's an SEC thing, guys. Don't forget. They always like to have their first couple conference games earlier. So most other teams that would have the Mercers of the world on their schedule, they did that in September.
Yeah, but they didn't do that, though. Alabama didn't have their conference game start. They had Florida State, which is ACC. They had Fresno, which is non-conference, and then CSU before they had
Colorado State
conference game.
Look, I think you look at Alabama's non-conference schedule, and three of those four games I think are actually pretty reputable games. Like, Fresno State and Colorado State, they're not posing huge risks, but they're not cupcake programs either. No. And of course, Florida State. And Mercer is a cupcake, and look, if you just said every major Power 5 school gets one cupcake a year, regardless of when they play it, like, I think that's totally acceptable. And the fact that Alabama said we're going to do it and we're going to basically be able to rest up for a week in a game that is as savage and as brutal as it is, that we're going to try to bake in a so-called sort of bye week before we play the most important game on our schedule, like, that's them using the schedule to their advantage, and that's not I can't blame them for that. That's them taking advantage of the situation at the end of the day.
Can you argue that Auburn did the same thing, by the way, before the Iron Bowl because they got Louisiana Monroe?
It sounds like they both know where their money is made.
Briefly, Eddie Meissonet of SportsFanJournal.com and FoxSports.com, very briefly on the NBA. Just got to ask you about the two teams that we care about the most here in Toledo, Ohio, and those are the Pistons up to our north and the Cavaliers to our east. We'll start with the Pistons because they deserve top billing. They've had a much better start to the season. Can they maintain the balanced scoring and the balanced rotation they've got? There's not one guy carrying them. It is everybody knowing their role and being very, very bought into Stan Van Gundy's system. Tremendous lift from Avery Bradley. Great improvement in many parts of his game from Andre Drummond. Reggie Jackson coming back from a down season. Can they maintain that and be a middle-of-the-pack Eastern Conference playoff team when all is said and done, in your opinion?
I think there's two ways, and I'll use brevity as much as I can here. I think there's two ways to look at it. I think on one hand, I think in the shape of this Eastern Conference means anybody can finish in the top half of the middle of the Eastern Conference and potentially fight for a 4, 5, 6, 7 seed, even the Detroit Pistons. I think they've got a lot of guys on their team that are all B-level players, and I think there's some realization in knowing that they are all B-level players so that they are better as a sum of their parts versus each of them individually. And so they're riding the high wave right now, and God bless them, because the NBA is better when the Detroit Pistons are good. It's better for all parties. However, at the same time, I would also be wary and say that something seems unsustainable. Andre Drummond shooting as good as he is as a free throw shooter, I don't know if that's sustainable or not. Reggie Jackson doing Reggie Jackson things, I don't know if we won't see those warts eventually come back to roost. And I also think that the better that the scouting gets on what the changes that Stan Van Gundy's made to the roster, it'll be interesting to see if he has a counter for the counters that are going to come his way when the schedule gets tougher down the road. But with that being said, like, I'm rooting for the Pistons. I want them to be good, and I really like what Tobias Harris is doing, because there were 4 or 5 years ago we thought that Tobias Harris was going to be a star in this league, and he continues to tease us every single day, and hopefully he can capitalize on it.
Eddie, last thing then, the Cavaliers, what's wrong with them? Is this temporary? Because I don't feel like it is. I feel like we're a month into the season now, roughly. They fell down by 23 to the Knicks. They've already lost to the Knicks and to the Magic, and you know, a bunch of teams that were not playoff teams a year ago. They're 500. They don't look cohesive. They don't look like they have chemistry. And once they develop cohesion and chemistry between now and February at the All-Star break, then Isaiah Thomas is going to come back, and they have to develop cohesion and chemistry all over again, because it's going to change the rotation, change the starting lineup, and change everybody's responsibility. I see a talented wreck here in the months to come. Am I panicking?
I think that this is, if we've learned anything about LeBron James, it's always to think about the long game. And look, basketball is not linear in that way where everything matters in regards to the next game and the next game and the next game. Is that this is a work in progress. And I think you would take some solace in the fact that when they play against really good teams, they seem to play better. Even in the loss to Houston, they played really good. They still couldn't defend anybody, but they played really well, and they've beaten really good teams when they've had to. You can't cure old, and I think that's going to be something that's going to be a real issue. I think Isaiah Thomas will not solve any of their issues, but he will make them better. And I think we're going to see a situation similar to maybe the 1995 Houston Rockets, where they just get into the playoffs. And look, this is year 7 of LeBron making this trek, or year 8, I should say, of LeBron making this trek to the finals, hopefully. And I think it will not matter so long as they get into the playoffs, because I'm not betting against LeBron James unless they're playing the Golden State Warriors or a team from the Western Conference, because I just don't trust anybody from the East to still have a solution for what LeBron is. And I do give them the benefit of the doubt of saying that they have a lot of dudes that know how to play when the times get tight. They've got a lot of guys that can get their own shot, which I think will actually benefit them when it comes to the postseason. And they've just got to figure out rotations, and they still got some time to make a trade or two. And I think we're going to sit up, and they're going to be at 45 wins, 47 wins, four seed in the East, and they're going to be okay with that because they got LeBron and everybody else does not. And I think if we see that happen and we see them start to play better in the playoffs, it will not be a surprise.
How smart does Kyrie Irving look right now?
He talks really smart. He speaks like he's a sensei or something. It's like kind of like fake deep. I don't know what to make of Kyrie Irving. I think the Celtics are looking really good. He's got a top three coach on his side. And I think one thing we take for granted is that players don't want to be coached. They absolutely want to be coached. And I think he is definitely getting real coaching from Brad Stevens that he would not get from Tyronn Lue. And that's not even a diss to Lue. It's just Stevens is in another class. So God bless Kyrie for that opportunity. With that being said, I still don't trust the Boston Celtics to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in a 7-game series. So we'll see how it goes.
Eddie Meissonette, read him on sportsfanjournal.com as well as foxsports.com as well. Eddie, always great to catch up with you out there from La La Land. Thank you, my man. Live big, not biggie.
Hey, all day.
All right, brother. Good stuff. Thank you. Hey, don't forget, when you're ready to watch your next game and you can't get to the stadium or arena, you know where you want to watch it, right? You want to watch it at Buffalo Wild Wings, where you can earn loyalty points now at B-Dubs with Blazin' Rewards. And if you hurry, you can earn those points by eating limited-time items like the Cali Chicken Sandwich, the Fiesta Pork Tacos, the Specialty 35th Weck Sandwich, and more. And plus, every QB has his favorite receiver, right? Well, the Blue Moon Belgian White Beer has its favorite companion. It's called the Blue Moon Barbecue Sauce. That's what you want on your wings when you have Blue Moon Belgian White. It's available for a limited time while supplies last and only at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Please drink responsibly. All right, as we head into our last local sports center of the hour, how about we give away two more pairs of those tickets to the Rockets and the Falcons Battle of I-75 tomorrow night at the Deut, 8 o'clock kickoff. Callers number 5 and 6. Callers 5 and 6 will give you two of the three pairs that we have left, and we'll give the final pair away before we're done right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Good stuff from Eddie Meissonette there last segment. Really enjoyed that conversation. Don't know that I agree with him on all of that stuff about the playoffs, but really good conversation. Speaking of college football, by the by, congratulations to our two most recent winners, Carl Rouse of Grand Rapids. Well done, sir. And Matt Headley of Pemberville. They were the latest winners of the BGUT tickets for tomorrow's Battle of I-75. We will have one more pair to give before the end of the show. Just listen for the cue. It'll probably be right when we're ready to lock out, just to kind of give you a little bit of a hint. And then it's just really luck of the draw if you are able to get to the right number. Kush, he says he can see the committee leaving out an undefeated Wisconsin team, even if they beat Michigan. And I think rightfully question what kind of a quality win the committee would see that as, given where Michigan is at this particular point in time. They started out the season ranked 8th.
Right.
Losses to Sparty and Penn State in a blowout loss knocked them all the way out of the poll. Then they've climbed back up into the high teens. And they've gotten better, as the competition has changed a little bit. I think that's safe to say. You know, wins over Rutgers and Minnesota and Maryland are not exactly, you know, the biggest feathers in one's cap.
Sure.
But they've gotten better. They've won 3 in a row since their loss to Penn State. They're breaking in a new quarterback for the future, Brandon Peters. And they've got Wisconsin and Ohio State left.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if a win over that Michigan team will be considered by the committee a big, massive win for Wisconsin, a feather in their cap, and then potentially playing a 2 or 3-loss team in the Big Ten Conference Championship game for Wisconsin. I get it. I understand how you might say that's not the best resume, but if you're undefeated as a Power 5 team and you win your conference championship as part of that undefeated record, I just cannot imagine how a playoff committee doesn't say you deserve the right to go to the playoffs.
And that's the conundrum here.
I disagree with Eddie on that. I really
right.
do.
And this is the conundrum here, and this is something that's been really been kind of simmering ever since the first rankings, if you recall, a couple weeks came out when Wisconsin, still obviously undefeated at that time, was came in at number 10, Miami at number 9. Now, because of wins against ranked Virginia Tech and bigger win against third-ranked Notre Dame by blasting them, as we know, this past Saturday night, that's why they're going to get the move up. But in principle, I agree with you. If you're a Power 5 undefeated champ, there shouldn't be any question. Heck, in my doodlings out of trying to figure out how to make it 8 teams, I have a clause in there that says if you are undefeated in any conference in Division 1, 1A, FBS, you should get in. And that's based on calculations. There's only been 5 maximum undefeateds per year. But anyway, the point is, on that side of it, yeah, I completely agree, because I'm the same way. If you're an undefeated Power 5 team, that should be the end of the discussion. The other flip side is, and we've been hearing some of these murmurs, again, since the first rankings came out, and I think that's very interesting you point out, because when you're the committee choosing the final rankings, and say Wisconsin is undefeated, yeah, Michigan may not look as much of a good game anymore. Because
quality victory.
Right, because there's a very real chance, obviously we're assuming Wisconsin undefeated, there's a very, very real chance when the committee on December 3rd, December 4th, or whatever date, I think it's the 3rd. Yeah, because they'll do it that Sunday. They like to do it that Sunday, you know, in like the NFL pregames or whatever. That they'll look and say, well, that's an 8-4 Michigan team. Because that's true. Michigan, in theory, could very easily lose their next 2 games to Wisconsin, then to the Buckeyes, finish 8-4. And then if you're Wisconsin, you'd only have 2 ranked wins against ranked teams all year, and one of them would have been against, most likely, Ohio State, a 2-loss team already in a Big Ten title game. And I could see where some on the committee would say, well, I don't care if they're undefeated. Look, this is just not that good of a team. It's a terribly weak schedule.
There has to be a point, doesn't there,
yes,
where the committee says, you know what? All of you 1-loss teams, if you want that easy in, try going through your schedule unblemished.
Right.
You know what?
There's only 3 left in the nation. Wisconsin, Alabama, and Central Florida, the only unbeatens in all the land.
No, Miami, too.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Miami. So there's 4 total.
Try that for a change. Try just not tripping and stumbling. Try not having that 1 loss you shouldn't have had.
Right.
You know, and then we'll talk. But you know what? You continue to do these things, it's going to be a battle between you and the other 1-loss teams, or in the case of Auburn, a potential 2-loss team.
Yep.
And that's on you. If you want the easy in, be an undefeated Power 5 conference champion, and we'll give you the automatic in as well. I think there's got to be some reward that says, even if you don't schedule the toughest non-conference schedule ever, and as we all have covered on numerous occasions, including with Paul Keels,
mm-hmm.
They schedule these things way in advance.
Yep.
You might think that a team is going to be a bigger challenge and a bigger non-conference game for you than it is by the time we see the state of the program when you play them 6 years later.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not your fault.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, out of conference for Wisconsin, this is another thing. This and not having played any ranked opponents until that game against Iowa, that's just a matter of how the Big Ten West has fallen, and that factor you're talking in scheduling the out-of-conference games, as you have to in college football so long ago. Their out-of-conference slate was Utah State, at BYU, who in, you know, name is good, but this year they're terrible. Their best out-of-conference game, and thank you, Eddie, I'm so using this one from now on, was against the Fighting Lane Kiffins of Florida Atlantic, who might win Conference USA. But those are scheduled so far out, you know, you wouldn't expect when those were all scheduled that Florida Atlantic would be your best out-of-conference game. You would have assumed it would be BYU. It didn't work that way.
That's right.
It's also, to a degree, not Wisconsin's fault that they're the only team worth anything this year in the Big Ten West. Let's call it what it is, Bob.
The Big Ten West
is horrible. Northwestern is the only other teams even above 500, for goodness sake.
And they handled Iowa, by the way,
yes,
very convincingly the week after Iowa beat the living tar out of Ohio
right.
State. So that's got to mean something to someone. At least I would expect it does. So you know, all of that is very important. All of those are pieces to
but
the puzzle.
But stripping it away
I just
again,
feel like I just feel like sooner or later the committee has to say, you know what, yes, going undefeated means something.
Yeah,
you know,
and it should. I'm a big believer in that, too.
It's not the toughest schedule, but everybody trips. You didn't trip. You're in, especially if you're in the Power 5.
I agree with that. So. That's the way it should be. But then again, I'm hoping for that chaos and an undefeated Wisconsin would somehow get left out.
Yeah,
because
I know.
Then we could have
18 disagree with
playoff
that at all.
Discussions again.
I cannot disagree with that at all. Kush, I hear music playing. That means it's time for that final cue to call for the final pair of tickets to UT and BG tomorrow night at the Deut. How about caller number 8 this time? It's the biggest number we've had thus far. Caller number 8 gets the final pair of tickets for the Battle of I-75. 8 p.m. kickoff tomorrow night at the Deut, so we will take care of you if you are that caller. Then stay where you are, because coming up right after the top of the hour, local sports center, it'll be drive time right here on ESPN 106.5. The ticket, we'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock.